It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
He'll hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know and that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at Play Like a Jet 1. And there are tons of rumors, whispers, what have you right now surrounding Deshaun Watson, the franchise quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, let's call for what it is, in Houston with the Texans. There's some buzz that there could be a potential trade. He hasn't officially told the Texans he wants a trade yet, but it seems like it may be heading that way. And so, of course, a lot going on in the media. And whenever there's a lot going on in the media that affects the Jets, we got to bring in our secret decoder ring who tells us what's really going on, who cuts through all the BS. And that, of course, is my friend John Grella, who is the head of his own PR firm, Jag Public Relations. He has a long resume, including 3 years as the head of communications for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he knows every trick in the book, as they say. John, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Hey, it's great to be here for something good for a change.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll see how it turns out, but this is definitely not anything good in the land of the Houston Texans. Maybe for the Jets it turns out good, but certainly not down there, because even if they do repair this relationship, this is never a good thing to have this be so public. Now, I want to know, first of all, where are the leaks coming from in terms of what Deshaun Watson specifically seems to want? His rift with ownership, him being upset about Jack Easterby, the promise that he would be involved in getting the head coach. Do you think that's coming from his agent? Is that coming from people that are friends of his, maybe around the league? Who are we looking at in terms of the leaks there?
I think the more we've seen, the more apparent it's become that it's coming from the Watson camp and that this is an orchestrated campaign.
So is this sort of like Jamal Adams, what we were talking about with that?
Precisely the reverse of Jamal Adams. And now it's a much more favorable situation for Jets fans, but it is essentially the same playbook. And you might recall from our previous conversation, Scott, that we pointed to a trend here where the NFL was becoming more like the NBA and that players were beginning to choose their teams. And sometimes they're choosing in favor of another team, and sometimes they're just choosing to get out of a given situation. But this trend continues, and athletes who have never felt more empowered and more individually powerful than they do now are harnessing their voices and their influence and are engineering moves to better their careers, at least in their estimation. And so now we're seeing this play run all over again, and it couldn't be more clear to me now that he indeed wants out. I was skeptical at first and didn't want to overreact out of the gate because just like Lucy with the football, Jets fans are accustomed to being teased and have the rug pulled out from under them. So it has definitely shown itself in recent weeks that there's always more logs going on the fire. And so this is a concerted effort. I mean, think about the little tidbits of news that are coming out as content, and they're really filling that content void with new observations and nuggets and preferences and gossip to build this momentum in favor of him being dealt, to the point that that the team and Nick Caserio eventually say uncle and deal him, even though I'm firmly of the belief, and what has kept me from overdoing it. I was going to say curb your enthusiasm because there was a great reference to it, to this very player on Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I've been trying to curb my enthusiasm because Nick Caserio takes that job because of Deshaun Watson. I mean, it's not for any other reason. It's not because he necessarily loves Houston, Texas. No offense to Houston. Or you know, there's anybody else in the roster that he thinks is going to be part of their plans for the next 10 years. So Nick knows what he has, and is not going to be in any big hurry to deal the player. That said, the player wants out, and not just maybe anymore.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
When we talked about Jamal Adams, you said it was clear to you that he was pushing every button he could, hoping that one of those buttons would be the eject button. When you see reports that Deshaun Watson says the only way he would come back to the Texans is if the owner, quote unquote, fires himself, do you think that he's setting the stage for the same type of situation that we saw with the Jets and Adams? In other words, if he's saying the only way that he would come back is if the owner leaves, there's no way he's coming back. Is he then setting the table for the potential to do exactly what Adams did and just press every button, do anything he can until the Texans finally give in and trade him?
That's correct. And we you may recall that one of the final buttons that Jamal pushed was a shot at the franchise and the ownership. Mm-hmm. So if lest Nick Caserio thinks, you know, he can avoid Twitter and, you know, watching SportsCenter and listening to SiriusXM NFL radio for a couple months and just grind in the war room, when the owner calls, coaches have to listen. And that is one thing that can unstick a situation like this. So it may have been Nick's plan to tune it all out and just let it blow over or mend fences slowly over time. But when the owner calls and says, I'm not going to be embarrassed, I'm not going to be humiliated, it's time to cut a deal. I think we saw that with Jamal, that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back.
We know how you expect Deshaun Watson to proceed. Let's talk about how you expect the other franchises involved to proceed. Let's start with the Houston Texans. What do you think they're going to do? And if you were advising them, what would you tell them to do?
Well, I'd probably up until, the last few days, I probably would have advised Caserio to tune it all out, attempt to mend fences, and hope that cooler heads would prevail. Now that the owner will be calling, and everybody knows, or most people know, that billionaire owners don't like to be put on blast like this, and there's one thing that could get a Bill Belichick to get off the dime, it's when Bob Kraft calls. Well, the same is true with his protege in Houston. So he's a new GM in supposedly in his honeymoon phase, but he's got to listen to the owner. He wants to get off on the right foot with the owner. So Deshaun's camp knows what they're doing. And so they are now going to be in the mode of fielding offers if they haven't already. And I'm sure they've had talks in some form, but now this is going to get real. And of course, we are in that strange period before the new league year starts where trades can be negotiated and they could even be worked out. But even after a trade can be agreed to, either team can back out of it, up until the league year starts and it becomes official. So we are probably not moments away or days away even from Deshaun moving to New York, even if a deal in principle was leaked this week, let's say, you can't really exhale until the league year starts. So I suspect, you know, Caserio is going to do all he can to draw a market, to generate a market like Joe Douglas did for Jamal, and play offers up against each other, and then pull the trigger. If we would have recorded this, you know, several days ago or a week ago, I might have been a little bit more cautious about this, but I think we basically reached a point of no return, and that Deshaun is not looking to come back into the fold and settle things with the Texans. He's seemingly already out the door.
John, we know that Armando Salguero had a report that the Jets were Deshaun Watson's number one choice, the Dolphins number two, and we don't know exactly where he got this from, but we know that reporters tend to be friendly with agents, and then also Armando reports on the Dolphins, so he clearly would have sources within that organization. Where do you think that information was coming from? Was it coming from the Watson camp, maybe some agents that are familiar with Watson? Was it coming from some of his friends within the league, maybe from the Miami organization itself? And what would be the motivation of whoever would be leaking this to Armando?
Well, without knowing 100%, the most obvious answer when you play the game of Clue and think about the motives of the different players, it seems pretty clear to me that the leak is coming from the Watson camp, and it perhaps, in my view, likely was planted with Armando because of who Armando is in that market and the prestige he has as kind of the main guy on the Dolphins beat, and it would be done to motivate the Dolphins organization to put together a package that is better than what the Jets have. So in other words, you leak to Armando Salguero that the Jets are in the driver's seat in hopes of getting Miami to step up.
So how does Miami proceed here? How do the Jets proceed? If you were advising them what to do, how do they play this?
All right, so here's another interesting wrinkle here, and that is the AFC East consideration. Caserio coming specifically from New England is very interesting. It's further interesting in light of what we know about Belichick and his Mangini experience, and how there are probably any number of departed deputies or members of the coaching tree, if you will, that have been careful not to get crosswise with Belichick after leaving. It was interesting when Flores went to New England, went to Miami, and I'm curious to know how that was more kosher than the way Mangini departed and how things went after he was in the chair. So could Belichick be appealing to Caserio to deal Watson to any teams but those two? And maybe just the Jets. And you would say, well, where does Belichick get off? Well, I mean, Caserio probably has a lot of affection and a loyalty to Belichick. And if Belichick asked you to deal the quarterback to 31 teams, but not this other one, you might listen, or you might try to listen. And ultimately, he has to do what's right for the Texans and their owner and their fans. But if you had, you know, pretty comparable offers, I could see Caserio not wanting to deal him to the Jets or maybe the Dolphins, but the Dolphins are better because that's sort of in the family, right? That's a spinoff with Flores. So that's why the Jets actually, it's a good thing that they're in the spot they are in the draft and have the assets of the cap room they do, because they're not beginning this competition with an advantage because of who has to say yes to them. And sure, Joe Douglas may have a fine relationship with Caserio, but ultimately Nick Caserio was raised to not like the Jets. And what makes the Dolphins a little bit better, at least, is his buddy Flores. So the Jets have to navigate around that. And that's why you can't assume that if Deshaun is traded, that he is going to the Jets, even if that's Deshaun's wish, because obviously he's not brokering the deal. He's not a free agent.
Ultimately, how do you think this ends up playing out in terms of the media and what the reports are going to be like over the next couple weeks and months? Do you think this drags out? I know that you mentioned before that the Texans don't necessarily have to be in a rush, but the heat could get turned up here from the Watson camp. How do you see this ultimately ending up? Not necessarily which team he ends up going to, but how does this process unfold over the next couple of weeks and months?
Yeah, sure. It might be that a deal in principle is struck prior to the new league year. It also may be the case that a deal is struck on a conditional basis after the league year starts and before the draft. It probably behooves both sides to do as much work, get as much work out of the way before the draft and have as much clarity leading up to the draft as possible. That said, what happened? That's why it sort of baffled me a couple of years ago when the Colts sold their pick to the Jets that we used on Darnold, where you just don't know what's going to happen leading up to the draft. So what happens if ultimately leading up to the draft, you learn that Urban Meyer all of a sudden decides that he likes, Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, and you wish that you had your number two back? Because if your choice was between the two Clemson quarterbacks, you might go for the younger, cheaper one that doesn't cost you all your draft pieces. So, there's a non-zero chance. It's pretty close to zero, but a non-zero chance that the Jets could end up with Trevor Lawrence, or just things happen, and a lot of different things can happen. So I don't know if offloading that number two overall pick today or as soon as the league year starts is a wise move for anybody involved.
Is there anything we're missing in this whole situation, John? Because you like to say it's a game of Clue. You have to figure out where things are coming from, what benefits who. Is there any X factor in all of this that we haven't touched on?
Well, I'm glad we got to the ownership piece, because I can't stress enough that as important and high profile as coaches and players can be, that owners ultimately own the teams. And as much as fans, lament that and get frustrated at the Johnsons or you name it, across sports, I don't like owner X, and they should just bankroll my hobby and not have any will of their own. Once Deshaun rings the bell and gets the owner's attention, then there's kind of no turning back. And once the owner calls the coach or the GM and says, this was all fun and games until he started insulting me, then that's a really, really big moment in all this. That's a big milestone. So it's essentially as big as the outright demand for a trade publicly. I think once you go after the ownership, there's kind of no turning back there. So I do feel like that's the biggest X factor in all this. But look, we've got a good amount of time, but we've also got free agency and a lot of moves that'll go down there, an especially interesting quarterback market and different pieces that will fall between now and late April when the draft starts. So you may not want to commit to a course of action right now, or I should say quite so soon. And sure, I'd sign up for Deshaun Watson now or in a few weeks. But if Joe Douglas is the adult in charge of this situation from the Jets standpoint, he has to be much more surgical about this and less emotional and less of a fan, right? So he's going to have to watch this thing unfold, the Watson part, the free agent part, the negotiation between the two teams, and proceed accordingly. So, today I would say we're well positioned. That said, I don't think that Nick Caserio is in a huge rush to give Deshaun Watson to the Jets, considering they're in the same division as his old boss and his mentor. So, that's I think going to be the hardest part of all this. It's not going to be as easy as stockpiling a certain amount of draft points and picks to give them what they need.
John, you mentioned Nick Caserio, but you also mentioned ownership. So let's take this up a notch. If the owner, Cal McNair, has decided that he, A, doesn't want to give Deshaun Watson his own way, and B, what a lot of people feel, rightfully so, that trading Deshaun Watson at 25 years old would be borderline insane. If he wants to try and control this through the media, if he wants to try and swing this in his favor on the PR side, because right now the PR seems to be on the side of Deshaun Watson, what could he do? Is there anything he can do?
That's a great question. I might say that as we compare the Adams situation to the Watson one, that Jamal Adams kind of picked out his team, the Cowboys, and that's not who he ultimately ended up with, as we know. So we would be the Cowboys in this analogy. be careful, because I think there is a human element. I know my personality works that way, where, somebody who's trying to jam you, you're not going to let them have the last word, right? And you're not going to let them work you or manipulate you. So if they say, trade me to the Cowboys, you say, that's what you think. I'm going to do what's right for me. You got your wish that you got dealt, but I'm not going to send you on a one-way ticket to the destination of your choosing. So that's another aspect of this that we've got to ponder. When it comes to McNair, I know firsthand that fans aren't inclined to side with an owner, particularly when the team hasn't been terribly successful. Billionaires, particularly NFL owners, a lot of times are lower profile, so they don't have the connection with the fans. They have billions of dollars, which makes them seem even less relatable. And players, of course, have players like Deshaun Watson that provide a lot of great moments and memories to Texans fans. So tough to keep up with that as well. So could he declare publicly his affection for Deshaun Watson? Yeah, I don't know what it would change. But I think it's not bad for an owner to mirror what the fans are feeling, which is, do you know what you have in this guy? And I think he's got to answer the bell and say, yes, I do know what I have in this guy. I know Nick Caserio knows what he has in this guy. I know that Cal McNair knows what he has in this guy, but he's got to maybe say it publicly, so the fans understand that this is not a continuation of what led to the Texans dealing Hopkins and so on. So they've got to demonstrate that they get it. And that's going to be job one. It's really unfortunate for them that they have built this after a successful run. They were smart enough to draft a few good players, including Watson and Watt and Hopkins. But it's really unfortunate timing that they dealt Nook Hopkins, and people continue to kind of scratch their heads at that move. And now we're looking at a year after, them doing it again. So, oftentimes PR problems and perception problems come down to whether a stranger thinks that the subject gets it or doesn't get it. Does he feel my pain or not? Does he understand people like me or not? You could certainly, there are many political applications to that, as we discussed before we started the pod. but that threshold question of whether or not they get it and they care is at the heart of so much of the of stuff like this. So so I think that that's probably all McNair has, but it's not going to change Deshaun Watson at this point. You know, I did think for a moment that Caserio would use the, you know, couple months that he has to take down the temperature. But it seems like Watson is not interested in that in the least.
On the subject of taking down the temperature, let's say that Cal McNair, the owner, says, I refuse to trade Deshaun Watson. Nick Caserio, you've got to find a way to fix this. It may or may not be fixable, John, but you're a communications guy, so this is partially your area. If you were advising them on how best to go about at least trying to fix this with Deshaun Watson, what would you tell them to do?
I mean, this is more in the realm of general managers and executives talking to agents and players and some diplomacy, right? So more in the political realm, but this obviously cannot be fueled by a public war of words. This is not to say that the Texans are culpable for that, just like the Jets weren't in the Jamal Adams thing. But when one side, I mean, this is true with human relationships, right? If one party in a relationship, in a two-person relationship, shows reckless disregard for the health and viability of that relationship, then it's doomed. So so they're, you know, they obviously cannot add fuel to the fire, but I don't believe they have added any fuel to this fire to begin with. So their best chance is to continue to reach out and try to meet with him and try to see whether they could make a coaching hire that he can get on board with and make him feel bought in. But you know, there's also an argument to be said that especially when you're an owner, you know, who is this player to tell me who to hire and not hire? Who is this player to go publicly and critique who's on my list and not on my list? Who is this player to, you know, to call out me, the owner, my team president, and you know, and whoever else? Essentially, you may have this tremendous affection for the guy formerly and for his talent and want to keep him in the fold. But resentment builds up. It's just human, right? I mean, we think of these folks as superheroes or a little bit more cold and businesslike than maybe we might be as fans at times. But ultimately, resentment kicks in. And I think that an owner and these others, especially when the finger is pointed right in their own faces, eventually say, you know, the heck with you. You're not – the, you know, we're not going to have you – we're not going to have the tail wagging the dog here. You are not the captain of this ship. And I'm happy. I have been happy to value your input and to bring you into certain things and pay you well. But you've gone too far now by publicly criticizing me personally and making us look like a joke.
John, this is why I love having you on, because you're our secret decoder ring, cutting through the mustard and letting us know what's really going on in this public relations battle and how everything works behind the scenes. This could end up happening. Deshaun Watson could end up getting traded, but there's still so many things in play. I don't know if it's going to happen. You don't know if it's going to happen. Nobody does. But it is really fascinating to see all the different aspects that are going on behind the scenes and for you to come on and give us a true understanding of what's really happening. John Grella, former 3-year director of communications for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, currently running his own public relations firm, JAG PR. John, as always, love having you on. We're going to do this again a lot more often, I'm sure, especially if this continues to carry on. For those that want to get a hold of you, talk some Jets, maybe have you and your firm handle some PR, how can they reach you?
Right. So if anybody needs a PR guy because they have a director of accounts payable at their company who's going public and demanding a trade to a competing company, please give us a shout. I'm at Jonathan Grella on Twitter is the easiest, and that's where I tweet about the Jets so frequently. I also have handles for JAG Public Affairs at JAG Public Affairs and at Protean Public Affairs or Protean PA. So just look at Jonathan Grella and you can find me there. Thank you for the opportunity for the plug again, Scott. Appreciate it.
Of course, John is the very best when it comes to PR. So if you need somebody to help you out there, you know where to find John. And if you just want somebody to talk Jets with and to pick his brain on stuff like this, he's available too on Twitter. Very interactive. So make sure that you follow him and hit him up. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest New York Jets podcast, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.